have been here at least part of the time. We've been going through Genesis for quite a while, and we're on this. It's the Abraham family. It's not Abraham anymore, but Abraham, you know, had Isaac, and Isaac had these twins, Jacob and Esau, and there was struggle from the beginning in the womb where there was struggle there. But Jacob tricks Esau. He gets his birthright, and then he gets his blessing. And so Esau's mad, and he said he's going to kill him. So Jacob leaves and goes away for 20 years. He marries these sisters, which is never a good thing. We understand he loves one more than the other, as we'll see tonight. And after 20 years, he's tired of his father-in-law not being the most honest person either. So Jacob ups and leaves, and he has a little clash with his father-in-law. And then he starts coming his way toward Esau. So after 20 years, get this picture in your mind. You've had a fight with your brother, and this is not, you know, 2019 where it's so easily accessible where you can text them or tweet them or Facebook them or call them. It was, you know, thousands of years ago where when you moved even 15, 20 miles away, you might not ever see that person, but he's moved 100 miles away. And for 20 years, he hasn't seen his brother. But the last time he heard anything from his brother, he was ready to kill him. So you can imagine the trepidation in Jacob's life. Jacob, earlier in his life, was, as Dad has always called him, a tent dweller. He stayed, as Dad said, among the women in the kitchens and doing those things. He was not an outdoorsman like Esau and Isaac. He was not a hunter. He was more of a studious person. And so... but then we see a little bit later on, Jacob has this Herculean strength where he's, you know, trying to impress Rachel, and he moves the rock, and then he wrestles with the angel a little bit later on, and the angel can't get loose from him. So Jacob can be a little bit manly when he needs to be, but for the most part, Jacob is probably not looking forward to this confrontation. So that's where we pick it up in Genesis 33, and it says, Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. Think about that. Now, Jacob had already sent people ahead, and they'd come back and told him, hey, he's coming with 400 men. The last time you saw this person, he was ready to kill you, and now he's coming with 400 people. I mean, Jacob's probably the same reaction that most of us would be is, I'm in trouble. So he divided his children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. You got to feel good if you're the maidservants and Leah at this point. So he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. So he knows that Esau's coming. Esau has 400 men, and he thinks he's going to kill him. And what does he do? He divides his family up. Now, remember, earlier he had divided his, remember he put half his possessions, half his people, half his servants, half his livestock on one side of the river and then half on the other side. That's a military strategy that there's no way Esau would be able to come and kill, you know, one side. The other side would then flee and get away before they cross the river. So that was kind of a military strategy. There's not much military strategy involved in this one. Esau would be able to wipe out all of them, but I guess he might think, Jacob might think, some of them might get away. They might better get behind a rock or something. But he's divided his family by affection, and there's no hiding it. The daughter, the sisters know it. The maidservants obviously know it. But he has the maidservants first, and then he has Leah. Can you imagine poor Leah walking up ahead with her? Now, she has most of the children. And then Rachel is last with Joseph. Benjamin is not born yet. And so she's coming along last. Again, think of poor Leah in this situation. She's walking with her children, and they're older at this point. But some of them are obviously old enough to go, hey, Mom, why are we walking ahead of Rachel? And she would probably say, well, your father doesn't love us like he loves them. And it would just be the truth. So again, Jacob has this propensity to be not make the best decisions when it comes to things like this. But notice this, there is some change in him. Remember this. The wrestling is what most scholars say was his conversion that we see before this. Jacob was all about lying and deceiving. We still see some of that, but the wrestling is what signifies, and that's where God changed his name. It says in verse 3, he himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. Now, in the previous chapter, Remember, he sent the families on across the river ahead of him, and he stayed back. And then he wrestled. Now he's had a little bit of a change of heart, a little bit of a change of character. Now he's leading the way. It's not that he thinks, and put yourself, especially men will understand this, if a man's coming with 400 men and he's mad, if he sees, and you know, you can say what you want to about Leah, we've broken all that down, doesn't mean she was ugly, but even if the woman's not what we would say beautiful, if a man sees a woman and her children, he's more likely to have mercy on them than he would Jacob himself. So Jacob's not putting himself up there to go, well, he'll have mercy on me before he will the people he doesn't know. Jacob knows that, but there's been a little bit at least change of character in him to this point. So he puts himself up front. And that way, if Esau kills someone first, it will be him. But he bowed down to the ground seven times as he approached his brother. Then there's that conjunction, but. So there's a change there, but. Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. If you think about it here, Esau is able to run, but Jacob's only able to limp at this point. You can picture Jacob limping, maybe even trying to run backwards as Esau's running toward him, but Esau is sprinting toward him, and when he grabs him, he embraces him, and he hugs him, and he kisses him. Now, no one knows Esau's intentions until this point. We as the reader don't know unless you've read ahead, and you've read ahead. Hopefully you've read the Bible before. But as you're reading this, you don't know. Jacob doesn't have the luxury of knowing the Bible now. Jacob doesn't know what's going to happen. And so you can picture Esau as he maybe dismounts from an animal or something. He starts running toward Jacob. Jacob's got to think, you know, here he's coming to kill me. But he bowed down to the ground seven times. They hug and they kiss. And we'll see that later on. Also, we'll see it with Jacob and his brothers when, you know, after they deceive him. I'm sorry, Joseph and his brothers after they deceive him. We'll also see it with Jacob later on and his son Joseph when they are reunited. It says, then Esau looked up and, he threw his arms around his neck and he kissed him and they wept. This is also a sign before we move on. This is also, if you fast forward all the way to Luke 15, the prodigal son. This is what the father does to the son. Remember, he sees his son at a far off distance and he runs to him and he wraps his arms around him, he hugs him and he kisses him. And so, same situation. The prodigal didn't deserve it. Jacob didn't deserve this grace. He didn't deserve this hug and kiss based on what he had done. And so, Esau extended grace to him. Esau looked up and saw the women and children. Who are these with you? He asked. Jacob answered, they're the children of God has graciously given your servant. Now, think about this. When Esau asked, put yourself in Jacob's shoes, Jacob could elaborate and go, well, all right, here's my maidservant, Bilhah, and this is, you know, Dan, this is Gad. Now, here's Leah. Now, I wasn't wanting to marry Leah. I was going to marry Rachel, but on the wedding night, Laban tricked me, their father. He didn't go into all that. We don't know for sure, but again, let's try to put ourselves in this situation. Jacob's probably thinking, okay, he hasn't killed me yet, so let's don't go any further with too much how God's been too good to me and done this and done that. Let me just say, oh, these are my children. God's blessed me with these children, so that's what he does. He just says, look, this is what he's done. God's blessed me, and that's kind of the end of it. Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, what do you mean by all these droves I met? He said, to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. Now, Jacob is being honest here. Again, a little bit of a turn for him. We'll see that he's still not completely honest, but at least it's a little bit of a turn. Well, why would you send all these people? Well, that's to gain favor in your sight so that you won't kill me, so that you will be pleased with me. And Esau said, I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. No, please, said Jacob, if I found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is seeing the face of God, now that you have received me favorably. At this point, Esau is able to call Joseph brother, but notice Joseph is not able really to return the same greeting. He still calls him my Lord. Why is that? There's still a sense of guilt with Jacob based on what's happened. Esau, for the most part, at least that we know of, has moved on. He said, "You seeing your face reminds me of the face of God." Why is that? Because of the grace that God has extended to his life. Esau is now extending grace to him. And he says, "Please accept this present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. So Jacob's like, take this stuff. God's been good to me. Take it. Esau said, "I don't need your money. I don't need any of this stuff. I don't need your gifts." Esau, to this point, is not controlled by his anger anymore. If you go back, you'll read where he was upset. And he's like, I'm going to end up killing him. But Jacob is insistent, just like he was with the angel. And so he insisted until Esau finally gave in. Now, there's no mention of Esau, how he obtained his wealth. We don't know how. It just says that he said, "I don't need it. I don't need your money." God's blessed him as well. Maybe he's blessed him, and Esau has had a turnabout in his life, and he sees it, and he understands it. But if you go back to Laban, God had to warn Laban, "Do not touch that man. If you touch him, I'm going to take care of you." God didn't have to warn Esau that we see here by the narrator, doesn't give us any of this. Esau just has had this change where he goes, "Look, I'm fine. I love you, brother. I don't need anything." But Jacob insisted. So then Esau said, verse 12, "Let's be on our way. I'll accompany you," which would make perfect sense. He's back in his homeland or close to it, but it's really a foreign land because it's been 20 years since he had been there. If you leave Danville for 20 years and then come back, don't visit any and come back after 20 years and probably wouldn't grow that much. But somebody said, "Hey, let me show you around. Let me introduce you to a few people." And you say, "No, I'm good. I'll find my way around." That's basically what Jacob is saying. Now, we understand that Jacob has an ulterior motive. But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and the cows that are nursing their young. If they're driven hard just one day, all the animals will die. So let my Lord go on ahead of his servant while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and at that of the children till I come to my Lord and Seir." Now, it would be very easy for Esau to call him on this. And first of all, he's traveled over 100 miles and they've made it. And, you know, now he's going a few more miles. More than likely, Jacob was obviously exaggerating about the children. And it would have been very easy to check and see if he was exaggerating about the cattle or not. You know, not me, but there's a lot of you in here that know all about that kind of stuff. It'd be easy to say, "Oh, that cow's nursing," or "This cow's nursing," or "This lamb is," or "This sheep is." But Jacob says, "Oh, we can't push them too hard, and I can't push the children too hard." But as we see, Jacob really wasn't, you know, he really had no intention in the first place. Now, Jacob insisted that Esau take him up on his, you know, gift. But now Esau is offering his gift, and Jacob goes, no. So Esau said, "Well, then let me leave some of my men with you." Now, it's one thing to say, "No, let me, I don't want Esau. I don't want," even if his, you know, was sincere. He said, "I don't want to put you out. You're going home. We'll stay here." He said, "Well, let me leave some of my men with you so that we can protect you, so that they can protect you." And Jacob says, "But why do that? Let me just find favor in my eyes of the Lord." So that day, Esau started back on his way to Seir. Now, again, he had 400 men. Sparing 20 or 30 wasn't going to be that big a deal to Esau. But for Jacob, that could have meant a lot. Most of his children are not old enough yet. Now, he does have some servants, but he doesn't have the protection of 400 men. He's, again, in a country that he's not very familiar with. And it would, you know, be the equivalent maybe today of you going wherever, Central America, Asia, wherever, and not being comfortable, not having a guide, not having anything, and then going, "You know what, I don't need any of your help." So that's basically what Jacob has done. Now, I know he's a little more familiar with the territory because he's been there, but that wouldn't keep all the bad people from doing something to him. But he turns it down. He turns him down. He goes, no, I don't want your favor. You go on about your business. So that day, Esau started on his way back home. But here's why. As we see, Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock. That is why the place is called Succoth. Now, Esau went one direction, Jacob went the other. We see at this point that Jacob hasn't completely changed. He's still got a little bit of deception in him. He may not have done it completely deceiving, but there has to be at least some hint that he's still a little bit worried about Esau. No, I'm not going to go with you. No, don't leave your men with me. And the reason I don't want your men with you, because if your men stay with me, I got to come back to your place. And if all of you leave, then I can go a different direction and not go where you go. And that's exactly what Jacob did. Now, this is the fourth place that Jacob has named up to this point. But the other three names were experiences he had had with God, such as, and I can't ever pronounce names, you know that, Manahem, Peniel, and now Succoth, and then Bethel was one of the other ones. The first three were experiences with God. This one's just named because he built places for his livestock. Succoth is a town east of Jordan, and is located in Gad. A little bit later on, they refused to help Gideon, and then Gideon went back and took revenge on them. And so he is there at Succoth. Then he moves on. It says in verse 18, after Jacob came from Padan Aram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city for 100 pieces of silver. He's doing just like Abraham. He brought from the sons of Hamor, the fathers of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. There he set up an altar and he called it El Elohi Israel, which means mighty is our God. Now Abraham traveled through Shechem, but Jacob stays there and he built an altar there. And so, really, Jacob never had any intention of going with Esau. We don't, that's what most scholars and commentators say. And you can say, well, why is that? Because, to be honest, there's probably, and we don't want to speculate too much, but there's probably still that little bit of shred where he's still holding on to the flesh, where he can't fully just trust God and say, hey, you sent Esau. And Esau's been good to me, showing me favor. I'm going to trust you. If Esau means something evil, then I'll let you take care of him on that. But I'm going to trust you. And I'm going to go here. So Jacob is still controlling things, you know, in his own sense. So he tells Esau, no, I don't want your favor that much. I don't want your people. I don't want to go with you. You go, and then we'll come. And then the minute he leaves, he goes this other way. But we see this journey that now he's back. And then we'll see that in the next chapter takes this brief respite from this story. And then we'll see as he's eventually going to have that 12th son, and that 12th son, it's his pride and joy, but brings, you know, the most grief in his life as all his brothers sell him. And so the story is about to pick up, and 37 to 50 is all about Joseph, or just about all about Joseph. So we have a few more chapters of Jacob and Esau before we get there. All right, let me pray for you, and then we'll entertain any questions, comments, or announcements. Father, we do love you. Thank you for your word. Thank you that it does not return void. We thank you that we can study things like Jacob and Esau in the Old Testament, and we can see grace in the picture of Esau. We can see how he forgave, and it may have taken him 20 years, but he did trust in you, and he got over that. And then we learned so many things from Jacob's life, and one of them is that we need to put our full trust in you, not just in some circumstances, but in everything, to trust you completely, Father. And so that is my prayer for all of us tonight, that we give you 100% of our lives. May we be more like Jesus in everything we do. For it's in his precious name we pray. Amen.